Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porchbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Porchbills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Porchbills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Pick on Sirius XM Radio.
You going to the party on Saturday? She asked, I said I didn't know. See, ever since I saw you on the back of some guy's bicycle, well, I've been feeling kind of so-so. So go, don't act so surprised, got that look in your light blue eyes. You can stop pretending. Yeah, I've been watching the movie all alone, wondering if there was gonna be an ending to the story, to the story, to the story. I guess I'll never know. See, I was running as fast as I could, saying the things I thought I should, but it was just a little too slow. Oh, Elizabeth, don't keep me guessing. I opened up the door and saw you undressing. The words came out one after another. You should have been my high school lover. Oh, you should have been my, oh, oh, oh.
This is Kayukas. Love this song, High School Lover. Coming back from a raucous and predictably fun interview with the Randy Hill. And Randy, just one of those people around the game that you just have to applaud, because he has taken the losses in stride and, you know, has been looking for a good horse. Talk about loyalty and being with George Weaver for 15 years, right from the start. He's everything you would want in an owner. Just a dream owner for a horseman. And that's why you celebrate the success when it comes. So, there might be people that have as much fun as Randy will for Derby. Nobody's going to have more fun. I guarantee you that. We're checking in with Dick Powell, and another big weekend ahead at Shot 10. And Dick, I also wanted to direct people to your to your regular missives at the Twin Spire Brisnet blog roll too, because you've been doing the recaps, and then they're always valuable reads. And I meant to link it the other day. I'll do it today. But I saw some of your post weekend thoughts the other day. Good morning.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. That's a lot of fun. Now, in honor of Festivus ending, I will not be airing grievances this morning as I did last week. So I will stay off. I will stay off the rants and focus.
I love it.
It's your job to keep me focused, but still.
Keeping the train on the tracks, not always easy. I got Tony Black next, who's a notorious runoff as well. We'll do our best. Dick, you know, before we talk about Champions Day at Chatin, a couple of thoughts about last week, and which also included, of course, the what we think is the send off for Winks.
Yeah, it looks like it. She didn't face much, let's be honest. She has horses that she's beaten before, but just the ease and professionalism and dominance. It's just remarkable that she can show up race after race, year after year, from 6.5 furlongs out past a mile and a quarter, and just run the same race, do whatever you Bowman wants. I always thought that if she was going to get beat, it would be in the Cox Plate because it's a left-hand course, and when they come out of that quick turn in Mooney Valley, there's like 100 meters. There's not much of a stretch, and yet she just, whatever he wants her to do, she does, and does it with aplomb and just look great, and it has to be just really tempting to say, well, why don't we just keep finding more races for her? But at 7 years old, if she is officially retired, bravo. 33 races in a row, God knows how many group ones, I think 25, almost all against males. We don't even make the issue of her racing against males anymore. it's just embarrassing for the males to keep pointing it out. And it's been a tremendous time for Australian racing that we always bemoan the fact that we don't have stars. Our stars retire too early once they become stars. And here they've had this superstar racing at the consistently highest levels for four straight years. I mean, that is just spectacular.
Well, and you know the filly and mare scenario is the one that is so easy. I mean, obviously Gelding's come along, and I mean, was takeover target? He was a gelding.
I'm almost positive, yeah.
So they've had that type, but when you think about Mackay B. Diva, who not to diminish Winks, but I'll take Mackay B. Diva, thank you. And even Ippi Tambe, although she was South African, but the filly and mare quotient in this is important because, you know, they're not stallions. They are going to produce one foal. And so to keep them on the racetrack at to four or to five or to six, you know, you're taking away, you know, one or two foals, but it's not the same equation. And having, you know, mares stay on and campaign, it goes a long way. I mean, it's a big win, and you know, here too. I mean, we've had a couple. I mean, that and certainly Breeders' Cup. You think about Goldikova and Ouija Board, and you know that there's been this modern history of mares that, you know, that were able to garner season after season type allegiances.
Yes, and the down under, that they've had Sunline, they've had Black Caviar, and the major thing with Mackay B. Diva was not only did she win three Melbourne Cups in a row, the last one carrying a high weight of 128 pounds, but she won a Cox Plate. She turned back and won the mile and quarter weights for age Cox Plate. So that puts her in rare company, and while we're on the subject, there's kind of shocking news today that Almanai is not going to go to the Austin Trail.
Right, I saw that.
That's too bad. That was one to really look forward to, but just would have added a lot to the race. Not that the race needs that much with Enable and Sea of Class and everyone else is going to show up for it, but that would have been a great Japanese story with their best horse going over and trying to win a race that they've tried for 20, 30 years to win. Just haven't quite been able to do it. So that was unfortunate, but she'll still be racing in Japan and Asia. They mentioned some international possibilities, so that would be nice to see. But, yeah, the Lynx just got it done with, I can't say monotonous regularity, but it kind of did get monotonous. Here she comes. You like, shakes the reins. There she goes.
Yeah.
Race is over. There weren't, like, Zenyatta was always strange for me, that I always felt that she was running too short. And for her to win all those races at a mile and 16th was really remarkable, because that was not her best distance. So there was always a Perils of Pauline aspect to Zenyatta. Is she going to get there? Is she going to make it? Where with Lynx, boy, there's only been once or twice where she had to sweat out the final results.
It's true. It did get a little monotonous. I don't mean I got to admit, I tuned in for a few, early morning, you set the alarm type appointment watching, and then I got to the point where she's going to win, so I'll just watch it. I'll just watch it on replay. When I wake up.
Yeah.
You know, what can you do, Dick? While we got it, while we got time before the. Before we get to Louisville, I'll be there starting Monday, and just some post prep season thoughts as we start to look toward Derby.
The Arkansas races just looked like they were the strongest region of the final four, so to speak. So I think those horses probably a little bit better. And next came the Santa Anita Derby horses. The rest of the region, the Bluegrass, I thought was kind of light. Not that they can't win, and not that we're going to have a favorite win again this year. But Omaha Beach is. I was talking to someone yesterday. I said, he reminds me of Sunday Silence. And the reason I say that is he's best on the turn. Sunday Silence is the best turn runner I've ever seen. And Omaha Beach really explodes on the turn when Mike Edson let go. I mean, he's just pulling away or making a ground as he had to do last Saturday.
Yep.
And that's a tremendous characteristic to have in the Kentucky Derby with the big field when you got to go buy horses. A lot of time you go buy them around the turns.
Yep.
And just he's just terrific. And then in the hands of Dick Mandela and Mike Smith, who, wow. And it shows you that quickness to make the first move. And I think what Mike has evolved into, because I remember Mike writing for Steve Adiker and, Bill Mott a million years ago. And, he's still Mike Smith, but now he's not afraid to make mistakes, and that's why he makes so few mistakes. He's willing to be aggressive. He's willing to press the button and open up a clear lead, and rather than wait. And he just, his instincts. I wrote this week, I can't figure out if he's cunning or canny. Because the cunning part is what he's done to Jose Ortiz in those two big races up here. And he's canny. He just seems to have the... you got door number one, door number two, door number three. Mike always picks the right door. So, great thing going into the Derby for Mandela to have Smith aboard. And I think Bob's horses will be tough, and I will not throw out Game Winner, who I thought had two legitimate excuses in his two losses this year. I'm a little worried about him being a grinder, being kind of one-paced. But I don't think that's going to hurt him going a mile and a quarter. And I think Bob will drill down a little bit farther to the Derby and tighten him up a little farther. And I think we'll see the real Game Winner in the Derby, but not at 3-1 like he would have been if he kept winning, probably 6-1.
In doing the kind of preliminary work we've been doing since Saturday, the Baffert, this is going to be a rare circumstance to have Baffert horses that are not necessarily the major focus, and not that they won't be prominent in the storylines and in the betting, but I agree, and the dismissing the dismissing of Improbable seems I think a little foolhardy.
Not quite sold on him as much as Game Winner and Roadster. I like him, and did not like those actions at the gate on Saturday, even before breaking. And he's kind of broken a little flat-footed twice in a row, but he had to get back out of the gate and was starting to melt down a little bit. That was concerning.
Even before he got to the gate, he was not in great spirits. He was edgy, yeah, I hear you on that. That's also a fair point. Well, Dick,
and very unusual from a Bob Baffert quarterback background. They're just known to get in the gate and go.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I'll ask him. We'll ask him about that before we get before they put him in the gate for Derby. Let's obviously we'll revisit as we get closer to Derby time. And let me turn it over to you for Shot 10, and plus some recapping from since last week.
Well, last week we talked about Happy Valley and how it was very formful, favorites, mid-price horses, stuff like that. Well, yesterday at Happy Valley, we had a $14.80, $58 winner, one favorite, a $334 winner. An $11 winner, $22, $17.40, and $38. So one favorite out of eight and a couple of big, big bombs, including 167 to one shot. So that was kind of wild, that shot at Happy Valley. The yesterday's eight-race card. Sunday, we have the normal 11-race card at Shot 10. And the following Sunday, we have Champions Day with three group ones that have attracted 16 individual group one stakes winners from Hong Kong, Japan, Great Britain, Australia, New Zealand, including with Lynx retired, the highest rated horse in the world right now is Beauty Generation, and he will be in the Champions Mile, as well as Santa Ana Lane, who is the joint highest rated sprinter, who will be in the sprint, and he is from Australia. So two of the biggies in the world will be running, a bunch of other Group 1 winners. First one goes 6 furlongs, then a mile, then the QE2, $3 million U.S. purse money is at a mile and a quarter. So that's coming up a week from Sunday, next week. I'm sure there'll be total focus on those three races, and they've already put out a form guide without barrier drugs in it, but all the every bit of information you could ever want on it. Sunday at Shot 10, we're racing on what they call a C+3 turf lane, which is farther out off the rail. And naturally, Hong Kong gives you all kinds of detailed information for that course configuration. And it was kind of interesting going through it. The 1,000 meters, the straight, doesn't really matter the post position, and 36% of the favorites have won. At 1,400 meters, the one turn, right-hand turn, 32% of the favorites win, which doesn't sound that high, but when you realize there's 14 horses in most of these races, that's pretty formful. And outside posts do okay. Only five races have been run on that course at 1,800 meters on the turf. So no real conclusions there, but there's a five all-weather races this coming Saturday. It looks like they're trying to preserve the turf course as best as they can with the rail out, and only five turf races, or five or six on Sunday. So the all-weather, mid to outside, does well going to 1,200 and going the metric mile, 1,650. The extreme outside does not do well, so you can make sense, two turns, and the first turn comes up very, very quick. So our picks for Sunday, and last week, Stephen, we gave out two picks, and one of them missed by a nose at 9-1. I was not happy about that. Mm. I think one of these two at a nice price. Thought we had it, didn't. So this Sunday at Shot 10, we're going to go to race number one, and we're going to use number one, Clear Choice, for Zach Purton, by far the leading rider in Hong Kong these days. Now, he's the one, but he breaks from post eight, carries 133 pounds, recent form has been very good, had an excuse last time out when he got parked very, very wide. Today, draws right in the middle. They're going to go on the all-weather, 1650. So the eight position is right in the middle. That should be good. Second, we're going to go with number four, Remarkable. This is a gelded son of USI, I'm More Than Ready. He's going to try to overcome post 11, but he does have John Marrera and John Size as his connections. And he's an all-weather specialist, so you see that when you look at the form guide. And for third, we'll go with number six, Hey Run. You got to love the trainer's name is Ho and the rider's name is Mo. So instead of writing out big, long names, they do your favor. So race one at Shot 10 on Sunday will be 1, 4, and 6. Race three at Shot 10, we're going to go stay on the opener. That's race four. Papers all over the place. Race three, we're going to get back on the turf, and we're going to go 1,400 meters. I'm going to go with number five, Buddies. Now, this is a lightly raced horse, and some of these horses are hard to gauge as to when they're going to get going. He's only had two lifetime starts, but they weren't bad. The first one was kind of one pace. The last race, he showed really good speed with a hot pace and hung on pretty well. Stretches out to 1,400 today, and I think he can come back and run the same race, and I think it'll be enough to win on post five in Schofield, riding for John Moore. So that's number five, Buddies. And he is a son of one of my favorites, So You Think. Number two, second horse I like, number eight, Applause. Had a good win, and then it's kind of been in and out since then, but was only beaten two lengths last time out in a blanket finish at Happy Valley. And third, we're going to go with number two, Sleep Education. Harris Teton, who had a winner yesterday, is going to ride this one. Kind of, you know, muddied up form, but dropping down from a higher level to a lower level and has to carry weight, but I think he'll be able to do it. And as a bonus round, we'll go to race number nine. This is on the all weather. We're going to go 1,200 meters. And I like number 11, Simply Big. Frankie Law is going to ride this one from the rail, but he does have really good speed, so I don't think the rail is going to affect him at all. I think, in fact, it's going to be an advantage for him. So we'll go with number 11, Simply Big. Second, number three, Just Not Listening, a son of Star Witness. We've been in just very, very good form. There's nothing not to like about him. Draws post 12, going to have to get out, but he does show natural speed. If he can get away quickly, he'll set up shop in good position. And third, number one, Encore Boy, a Matthew Kuhn. So that's 11-3-1 in race number nine at Shot 10 on Sunday. And then, as we say, we'll be back at Happy Valley next Wednesday. And then one of the big days of spring racing is going to be the following Sunday, April 28th, Champions Day, with three Group 1 races, about $7 million in U.S. purses, and two of the highest racehorses in the world competing on the card.
It looks great, and they've been sending out steady news and notes on the fields as they're coming together, and we'll talk about it next week. Dick, I appreciate it as always, and we'll talk to you from Churchill next Wednesday. Thursday.
Okay, sweetie.
Okay, Dick Powell. Not at all. Dick Powell, everybody. And Dick will start to form up his Derby opinions. And as we go to the break, Tony Black is going to join us. And I got a couple of things for Tony. Did you see the news? Did I give you this one? Did I mention the head-to-head bets? They're going to be doing some head-to-heads. Oaks and Derby. And in addition to the head-to-head wagers, it's going to be a very interesting concept for the pick six. The pick six, Oaks and Derby Day. This is going to be a forced, you know, must pay. Instead of a standard pick six sequence, they're going to link all the grade ones from Friday and Saturday, which is really cool. The La Troyenne and the Oaks and the Woodford. No, not the Woodford anymore. What is it now? Oh my God. I got the wrong bourbon. the current bourbon is for the Turf Classic. Early times. Anyway, whatever it is, whatever the bourbon is, the bourbon of the moment, and the Derby, they're going to have a 2-day pick six, $2 minimum with a mandatory payout on Saturday. That's a cool concept. I like it. I like that. So more on the betting menu when we get to Kentucky. Right now, we're well past the top of hour two, but let's take a break here, and we'll come back. We'll do a reset, and Tony Black will join us, and then Steve Haskin. And we got to get to Rich Eng. I've been so bad. We've somehow, with all the travel and all the mayhem, we have not had a chance to talk to Rich. And undoubtedly, Rich will have having been in Vegas, paralleling Steve Davidowitz's time as well in Vegas. I'm sure that Rich will have a couple of thoughts. Steve Haskin actually probably does as well. But next, Tony Black, and I want Tony to talk about the latest mayhem created by Paco Lopez Sunday in that nightcap at Gulfstream, forcing his way out on the turn. This is just unbelievable. He just doesn't learn a lesson, this guy. It's amazing. I don't know what it's going to take, but I can tell you that the jocks and the jock agents are fully disgusted and really have had enough. I heard from more than two about it. But I wanted Tony watched it, and we'll get his thoughts about, if you are going to be aggressive, where you can do it and not endanger your fellow rider and, create heel clipping potential. And then, I mentioned Burl McBride in hour one, and Tony and Burl had real overlap in the 70s, both riding for Jack Van Berg Strings. And when I brought up Tony's name with Burl McBride, his eyes lit. He said, "Oh my God, Tony Black." So Tony, probably didn't ride against Burl, but they had, that commonality, the Van Berg University, as it were, all the riders and horsemen that worked for Jack and rode for Jack. Back after this, well into hour two here on Thursday at the Races. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories? and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, coming up on the bottom of the hour, a little bit behind, but that's okay. It's been fun already this morning. A little international chat with Dick Powell. And before that, Randy Hill, Tax and Vekoma, Derby bound. Tony Black joining us, of course. And Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. And you know, I've got to tell you, I've been missing the show because I've been running errands trying to get things squared away with the holiday coming up and the house straightened out. So I missed the show this morning. But I'm glad
catch up.
That you called me to catch up because I might have been at Home Depot if you didn't call me earlier.
Good. So I'm keeping you from your appointed rounds. That's all right.
It's a good excuse to keep me from my appointed rounds. I don't mind it. And I can tell Kylie it's your fault, not mine.
Exactly. Well, and I'll freely accept the blame. I've got so much for you, and part of it is ripped from, a lot of it's ripped from today's headlines, as they say, the things that went on the past week. And I was late mentioning to everybody that on Sunday, I don't think I got to Tuesday, and I only slipped it in as we were ending the show, but with you, I'll mention Mikey Farrow and Patty Farrow been handling our Just Enough Hope, and she broke her maiden on Sunday. And I want to, with you here, given the Parks tie-in, I wanted to really acknowledge Mike's done an unbelievable job with this mare, who had a hock issue that was hocking her and left and right for a year, and she's finally healthy. And Mike basically doesn't do any work, Tony, in the mornings. He basically runs her, you know, every couple of weeks, and she's thriving on the work.
Well, you know what? A lot of horses do thrive on that type of a regimented schedule. You know, very few work long, you know, some long gallops, you know, keep their air up, but don't irritate what you have. And it comes to little nagging ailments by working them. If they're going to irritate their little nagging ailments, you know, let them do it in the afternoon after the race. But, you know, I don't know the horse, but I think I saw that race. Was that a maiden 20?
Yeah, maiden 10.
10, okay. And it won by many lengths, quite a few lengths.
Yes, yeah, she won by 8.
I saw that race. And you know, horses that sometimes have little nagging ailments in behind. Now, if I remember correctly, She was forwardly placed.
Yeah, Manny Esquivel. Manny,
I saw the race, and I didn't put together anything that it was your horse. But I did see the race, and I'll tell you what, I said, man, this horse won with complete authority, and seemed like it really was in complete control in the early stages of the race. And you know, horses that have problems sometimes in behind, or little nagging ailments in behind, sometimes they don't leave the gate sharp and they take a little bit to get themselves together. But if I remember correctly, that horse got herself right together in the early stages and was in control right throughout the race and drew off. If that's the race.
Absolutely. It absolutely is.
I saw the race, Steve, and you know, I'm sorry I didn't put two and two together. I got to give Mikey a lot of credit because he, you know, his crew and him, they work on these horses, but they don't train every horse the same by the book. And I've ridden for Mike over the years, and he usually finds the right caliber of race to place a horse in. You know, and she dominated that field, and she looks like she'll be have some wins in the future. But Mikey does work on them, Mike and Pat, and the crew's got a good crew. You see the same people sometimes working there for years, so he must do something right for the people, and he does something right with the horses, because one thing about it, Mike wins, and that's, you know, that's what we look for in the game, a guy that leads them over there, places them properly, and keeps them in good order, good health, and get the job done. So congratulations to you, and congratulations to Mike Farrow, even though he's had a ton of winners in the last few years.
Yeah, I'm just delighted, and Gary's very close. Gary Siak is very close to Mike, and you know, has done this before. Either send him horses to saddle or send him horses to keep. And it felt right away when she went down there that this was a good spot for her. And she's actually, you know, by pedigree, she's a turf horse. So we'll see. I don't know if there's something for her at that level, but anyway, we were delighted. And for partner Tony Montanino, who named. He named Hope for his wife, just enough hope, and Tony was game, you know, sticking it out, because a lot of people would have given up at a certain point, you know, when she was a 4-year-old and had really not had a chance to run with any regularity, and hadn't, you know, she had shown a hint of ability, just a tiny hint, and in like her second start, and Tony said, no, let's keep going, and he's getting rewarded, you know, by sticking it out, and I'm happy. You know, McMahon. This was a horse that, this was a crazy story. We had her fellow 5-year-old that we bred, Carlisle Bell, who runs today actually in the fourth. Bell was out in the field, and Woodbury Payne was up. I wanted Woodbury to see how she was doing, because Wood was gonna get her started, you know, as a yearling. So, summer of Saratoga that year, and she was at McMahon's, and we went to go look at her in the field, and she had this Paddock Pal. And so, you know, she comes up, and the Paddock Pal comes with her, and we're talking, and you know, they're nuzzling, and you know, they're friends. And when we got done, John took us out there, and John and Joe, you know, when we were done, they said, do you want this, do you want to take this one with you too? I said, what do you mean? He said, the people who had the mare here, I think the woman that owned her, the dam, had died, and they were looking to, you know, to do something with the babies that were on the ground. And we said, sure, all right, yeah. So we took the two of them home, and you know, we knew we were taking home the one we bred, but we got this one too. And here she is at the age of 5, you know, putting it all together. It's really kind of rewarding, I mean, to stick it out and not give up.
And you got to have grass in her future, maybe, you know, like you
oh,
said,
yeah,
there
yeah,
might
she's
be more to her than just the dirt horse that broke
yep.
its maiden for 10. You know, it's amazing when it comes to the stories that are told about horses. And that's why I said someday I'm going to have a horse, I'm going to name it Hopes and Dreams. Because there's a lot of hopes and dreams in this business that keep people in this business. To tell you a real quick story, if you ever look up a horse that ran in the... I forget when. I think it was in the 80s. It was 81. I went and got, you know, Bob Bell, who bred Dave's Friend, who was an Eclipse Award sprinter, and I had ridden Dave's Friend. He had a bunch of yearlings still on his farm, and he said, come on out and get on them. And it was late in the year, farm in Maryland. And I got on about 7 or 8, had a dozen there. I said, I like this one, and I kind of like this filly that toes in. She's crooked leg filly, but... And she's got a splint on the other leg. I says, but she moves so good, I don't know how she moves this good. He says, well, I don't know. He says, I'll sell you the other two. So he calls me about a week later. He says, I'm going to send you those other two, and I'll send you that filly. Just put another $2,000. That's all. Give me $22,000 for the three of them. And this is when I was married to my first wife, who trained horses. All the horses did okay, the two that I really liked. This filly didn't make it to the races because she was crooked, and I left her on the farm in Jersey, and I didn't bring her into training until 3-year-old year. I ran her in her 3-year-old year on the bottom because she towed in so bad on her left front, and nobody would even look at her. She broke her maiden. She won 9 out of 13 races in a, you know, reasonable amount of time, and she went all her conditions. She won a 3 other than in Merlin, and then finally her confirmation caught up with her, and she pulled up bad one day, and I sent her home, and somebody bought her as a broodmare. But she won 9 out of 13, and that was the one they just threw in on the package deal. Her name was The Minorities, and Bob Bell named her. He says, I named her The Minorities because minorities sometimes can finish in front, and she probably will have some speed, and maybe she'll finish in front. Good name. But The Minority, she won 9 out of 13 races, and it was just a throw-in deal. But you never know, you know?
Sure, sure. So many stories like that about broodmares that ended up switching stallion at the last minute because stallion got taken out of service or got hurt, and now you've shipped the mare to the stallion barn, and they say, do you want to take this one instead? Summer Bird is one of my favorite stories about that. They ended up with Birdstone at Gainesway, and they were supposed to go to somebody else, and something happened. And the mare, the only reason the Jerrymans were even breeding the mare was because a surgeon had worked on the wrong knee. And they retired. They said, well, all right, we're not going to, it's too late to now operate on the other knee and send her back into training. They said, forget it. We'll just retire her and breed her. And that's how they got Summer Bird.
More stories than enough out there, you know?
You can't like make, said, it's so
you
great.
You can't make this stuff up. You don't
no,
have
you
to
can't.
Make up stories in the horse racing business. People tell me when I tell them stories, well, you tell good stories. I said, I don't have to make them up. They're true stories.
No,
I lived
they're all
them.
True.
I live these stories.
Exactly. Well, and you also can't make up the antics, the hijinks, the stupidity of Paco Lopez, which is now, I mean, it's just getting ridiculous. And that stunt on Sunday, luckily nobody went down. There wasn't a clipped heels. But if you're going to force your way out, you don't do it on a turn.
No, on top of that, you know, he's in a bad spot, which he has. Sometimes you just got to fight it and live with it till things break up after you straighten out and further on down the stretch. Chances are it's going to break up. But when you become too aggressive, and he was totally overly aggressive, he's a half a length off the two horses to the outside of him. If he was ahead in front of him, he could have eased them out and finessed them out. But when you're a neck or a half a length, that horse has control of you. The outside horse has control of you unless you're ahead in front of him and you're able to ease him out. When he has control of you, the only way you can get out, which is not, is you sit, you wait, and hopefully you don't come down the stretch throwing your horse down because it breaks up, and you go out and you get the job done. The way he got out was just bang, bang, bang him out, and the number if I would, you know, with my experience with stewards throughout the country, I rode in Chicago, rode in Santa Anita, rode in Jersey, rode in Pennsylvania, rode in Maryland. I would have thought that number, if you'd have showed me that and before you showed me the results, I said, oh, that came down, you know, that had to come down. You can't bang a horse twice like that and bang it in the middle horse into the outside horse. You turn and you actually turned them and slammed them. Has to come down. I don't understand, except this is the only way you can explain what they did, and it's not a reasonable explanation because that was far past what's acceptable. They're saying there's no rule that they're not going to abide by the rule, the stewards are saying.
Well, and he came down.
And they're going to use.
He came down. Oh, yeah, he came down.
He said he didn't come down.
Oh, no. I didn't say he came, didn't come down.
He needs to be
sat down. He needs to. It's something. Somebody's got to. I mean, get to him. I mean, in addition to almost crippling Romero Marat. This can't go on.
No, you got to pull somebody up. I didn't know. The way I read the text message, I thought you said should have.
Oh, no. He came down. He came down.
Yeah, okay, it came down. But now the next thing is that's because of his history. You don't just judge that from that particular instance. You're a persistent offender. When you are a persistent offender and you are creating an unsafe situation to other riders, you're not showing them the respect that you should show them, you're being careless to the point where now you have to be pulled up. It's not, well, I drifted out a little bit or I drifted in, you know, and it doesn't happen all the time. But with him, he's a persistent offender, and obviously the way they've handled him, it isn't making a point that he's changed his way in any way. He's an aggressive rider, but he crosses the line on too many occasions. I remember when he was riding a little bit, a lot of Monmouth and Shippen and Ryder Parks, and there wasn't too many days that would go by that there wasn't some negative reaction to him. If he's not getting the message, there's a way you have to send the message more forcefully, you know, and it's severe suspension. It's not 5 days, 7 days, you know, you got to sit somebody on the ground, maybe 6 months, it comes down to 30 days ain't getting it, about 6 months. And when you come back, you better keep your nose clean and you can be competitive and aggressive, but don't cross the line. And he crosses the line on too many occasions. I don't dislike riders that are aggressive. I was accused of being one of those riders that was aggressive. But you know what? I rode for 40 years competitively, and I can say I never dropped another rider. I never dropped another rider by accident or on purpose. They never hit the ground, never hit my heels, never hit the ground because I did something overly aggressive or overly competitive or something that was not taking into consideration their safety and health and well-being. You know, he crosses the line too much. He has to be pulled up and severely pulled up.
Well, we'll see if I haven't seen if there's a hearing what the ramifications were yet. But I said right away on Monday when I brought it up that I wanted you to watch it and comment. Let me also get from this past weekend the opportunity I had on Friday. I met Burl McBride for the first time, and what a terrific racetrack veteran and character. And we were talking, and he talked about being in New England and on the Jack Van Berg team. And I brought you up, and he laughed. He said, "Oh my God, Tony Black! Tell him I said hello." And you know, McBride had he was a top. He was a top rider in New England.
Oh, absolutely. A really good rider. And rode for Jack Van Berg, Mark Wallace, Fats, Joey Petalino, all the guys that were in some way connected to the Van Bergs or guys that came up and under Van Berg. And he was a top rider. And you know what? He was kind of rider. He knew just how far to go. I rode with him. He even came to Parks when it was, I don't know, Philadelphia Park or Keystone, I forget. But he was there. And you could ride with him. You knew where he was at. He knew where you were at. And he was an aggressive, hard riding, finished well on the horse. And, you know, did his share of reducing. He wasn't as small as me. And then I hit the box and reduced and went out there and did a great job. Real aggressive, but Very rarely did you see them, guys like that, that I rode with or rode under, very rarely did you see them cross the line and cross it to the point of being careless, you know, and jeopardizing somebody's safety. They didn't do that. They knew how far to go. Everybody makes a mistake once in a while, you know, and you hit one too many times, you drift in a little bit more than the width of the horse that you're trying to intimidate. But, you know, it isn't flagrant, and it's not, you're not a persistent offender. It just, you're not out there trying if every once in a while you maybe go a tad too far. You didn't maybe cause anybody, jeopardized their safety or made them hit the ground, but you just rode them too tight. You weren't trying hard if you didn't make a mistake once in a while, but it wasn't, you weren't persistent in making those mistakes. They were just the once in a while. But he was a good rider, and he was a lot of fun to be around. I remember when he was riding, you know, for the guys that, some of the cowboys, you know, that he would ride for, that were characters. And there's a lot of characters in this business, trainers, jockeys, and he fit right into that professional, but a character.
Well, I wanted to give you that opportunity to mention him, and he's got a likely winner, I think, in the Rainbow on Saturday at Arkansas with the Arky Breds at Oaklawn. So I'm hoping to, I'm looking forward to having him on. Win or lose, I'm going to get him on the air at some point without fail. But I,
you'll have some fun with him, Steve, because
yeah.
Steve really knows not a loss for words and stories. He's probably got more stories than I got, Steve.
I don't know. I'm gonna only because he might be a couple. He might be what, a couple of years older than you. Not by much.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody by much. You know, when you get to this age, well, everybody maybe just a couple years younger, a couple years older. But the one thing about it, guys like Burl, me, and dozens of other guys, we survived some of our antics, some of our good behavior, some of our bad behavior. We survived it, and Burl was one of those guys, survivor, and he made his presence felt whatever track he was at. You know, and he visited a lot of different tracks. You know, you make your base of operation, certain tracks, Suffolk or whatever, Midwest. But he was the kind of rider, you know, he might show up at Oaklawn, you know, because he had people and clients that he rode for. Might show up at Parks or Monmouth Park. But, you know, he got around.
I love it. Well, I had seen his name, and he, you know, he's been training, and I hadn't had the opportunity to meet. So that was one of the. Whenever you go to Oaklawn, you're sure to come across your share of racetrack characters that and veterans. That it's just a hotbed, you know. It's kind of a regional. I mean, he was from New Mexico. He grew up in New Mexico, and you know, came out of that Southwest upbringing, and I want to say, did he say Alamogordo? I can't remember, but we'll get the full Burl McBride story.
Probably rode a few quarter horses in his day too. Might have been at Rudoso or some of those racetracks, but I'm not saying for sure, but you know, he probably rode some quarter horse races and was definitely the good rider. Anytime he threw a leg over whatever kind of horse it was, you got a top end performance from him. And he was like a very charismatic, good guy to be around in the jocks room. And you went out there on the racetrack and you knew you were going to compete hard against each other. And you know, now he's at Oaklawn. He rode at Oaklawn at times. I'm glad he's training at Oaklawn. That's one track I never got to and only had a few opportunities. One year I was supposed to go ride a horse for Juan Arias, who was training Cannonero II at the time. And I'd ride some horses for him, and he had a horse called Hassie's Image I'd won on in Maryland. He says, we're going to run him in the Arkansas Derby. And I said, I can't go. My agent said I can't go, so I didn't go. He was second in the Arkansas Derby, Hassie's Image. That had to be in the 70s. It was a year or two after Cannonero won the Derby. So A lot of years since then, though.
I was going to say you're pulling out all the stops. Well, Tony, I appreciate it. I appreciate the reactions and the news and bits to touch base. We are turning our attention to Kentucky. I head there tomorrow afternoon, and next Thursday we'll talk to you from Churchill Downs.
I wish I was going with you. Yeah, next Thursday, talk to you. If you get a shot, look up a horse named V Minorities and tell me if I didn't manage her properly for my first wife.
Give me that.
V Minorities. Look her up. You'll like her form.
V, just the letter V or V-E-E?
No,
or?
V, T-H-E, V. The Minorities. I always called her The Minorities. She even broke my foot when I was feeding her one day for my wife. but she paid for herself. Throwed in that deal. Bob Bell threw her in the deal for $2,000 more on with the other two. So, but you look at her, and she won 9 out of 13. Tell me, just text me if you find her for me.
I got her. I got her. I found her in 2 seconds. She was a Maryland bred.
Bob Bell bred her. She was in for maiden 8 one day. I scratched her and run her for maiden 5.
Look at you. And then I tell you what, she went on a nice run. She, in the claiming ranks, got beaten her second start, then won a pair, then fourth, then won 4 straight, won an allowance at Keystone on December 20th, 82. And then you ran her in the My Juliet. You couldn't resist, could you?
But look, she only ran, 13 times?
13 times, 9 wins, 1 second, made $52,000.
She wound up $2,000. He threw her in, and she won a 3 other than in Merlin, I think it was.
I love it. That's tremendous.
Yeah, we had some fun. Hey, we'll be looking forward to talking to you next Thursday. I'm going to listen to the rest of the show because, I've been running and not listening, but I will be listening.
All right.
Take care, Steve.
Next. Tony, thanks a lot. Tony Black, everybody, always just so much fun. Tony gives you the perspective from the irons and from the backstretch, from the jocks room, and everything else he's experienced in his life. We'll take a break here. Steve Askin going to join us next. Final thoughts from Steve on the Triple Crown prep season and where his mind is with us just 2 weeks away, really, from Derby. We'll also talk to Steve about, I imagine Steve had some overlap with Davidowitz at DRF. And we'll also talk to Steve about Lenny's book. For those of you that heard Lenny Shulman yesterday talking about his Justify book, 111 Days to Triple Crown Glory. Steve Askin, when we get back, Rich Eng later as well.